Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program heard weekdays on 18 radio stations with 27 signals all across the Treasure State. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook at Voices of Montana and on the internet at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. It's Shakespeare, well, not in the parks today. It's Shakespeare in the studios today. This will be a lot of fun. I'm going to help celebrate this summer tradition that's been going on in Montana. Do you know how long? You might, because we've talked about it. They had their 50th anniversary a couple of years ago. 52nd season here. How about that? And you know what it does, I think, for a lot of us? Well, it gets us experiences that we don't necessarily have. It's free, but it brings us together as a community. I think that's the most important thing about Shakespeare in the Park. Guess who's here today? Hamlet, Horatio. I'll talk more about that. Riley O'Toole in studio, 11 seasons touring in Montana, the company's new associate artistic director, and Horatio in studio as well. And that's Mikey Gray returning for her fourth season under the big skies, big lights. It's Shakespeare in the studio today. Right into this because they're in studio and I'm so excited, you guys. Welcome, Riley O'Toole. Hello, Riley.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for being here. And Mikey Gray, hello.
Hi, all. Thank you so much. Yeah. Such a treat to smell the roses.
Well, there's plenty of those around Montana, too. I don't even know where to start because there's so many things we can talk about. I guess my first thing is how this program really, over the years, I mean, I can go back 50 years and remember Shakespeare's in the parks in communities I've lived in. That tells us something, doesn't it, Riley? What does it tell us?
There's so much tradition attached to our events. Company's been around since 1973, 52 years. We just had the other day at one of our events in Bozeman, four generations of one family that have been coming.
Isn't that cool?
Bringing a four-year-old and coming because it's accessible. It's in the parks. It's free. And there's something for all ages to connect with in these stories. And there's reasons we are still performing them 400 years later. And we got two great plays this summer. Hamlet, perhaps the most known of Shakespeare's plays. Some say that
To be or not to be.
Yes. Oh my gosh. There's so many one-liners in Hamlet that you'd recognize. And then paired with that this summer, we've got The Winter's Tale, which is a lesser known of Shakespeare's plays, but got a lot of great comedy in it, a lot of themes that our audiences will recognize and resonate with from other of Shakespeare's plays, music. But both are a lot of fun for the whole family to come out and bring a picnic and enjoy our beautiful outdoor spaces.
It's really a great event for communities like in Montana. And Mikey, you had said in looking at your bio, you had said that you believe this. Of course, maybe you could say that to all the audiences, but you really enjoy the Montana audiences at these events. Why?
Best audience in the world. And I really, really stand by that. I've performed in many different venues and places across the country in New York and Chicago. And there's just something that's so unique about this Montana audience, right? Like to be performing in front of rancher, like homeschool girls that are more skilled at coiling our sound ropes than we are, you know,
right.
There's something so magical about that shared experience. And I will say that this experience, you know, it is my fourth summer coming back and it is it's a very demanding tour. We toured to 65 communities across the 5-state region in the span of about 2.5 months. It's a very intense experience as an actor to be going on this massive, epic tour. But something that is sort of essential to the experience is how the audience fuels us as actors, as individuals, as people, as collaborators. There's an energy out here in Montana that is so special. I mean, absolutely engaged in a way that an audience in New York, you know, you don't receive that. Mm-hmm. You're blasted with light as an actor on stage, and you can't actually make out faces in the audience. But here, we're performing under the sun as the sun is sort of setting, and we get to really look people in the eye, really take lines to someone in that front row or to someone in the third row, and engage with them. And oftentimes, there will be a child that responds back. I had a really incredible experience my first summer where, you know, one of my lines, I don't remember the exact question, but it was like, what do I do next? My character Imogen was like, what do I do next? And a little girl in like the fourth row said, you have a sword. And my next line was, I will take my sword. Right. And so she knew, she predicted. And then she also felt compelled to help me, to help my character on stage. And I was in absolute awe because truly my next line was like to take the sword and say, this is the solution. Right. I will defend myself. And so there's something just so magical about not only the verbal responses, which are rare, but they're very sweet. But just the energy of each night. It is really like a festival experience that we provide, an opening and a closing night in each town every single day. That is just so, so unique and so fueling and really makes me keep coming back to this
and
contract.
And it makes art so real for us too. Sometimes we forget, how to engage with art in its many different forms. And this helps us because it's in our park, so to speak. I look at you, again, Micah Gray, thank you, Riley O'Toole. Are you guys troubadours? Are you gypsies? You know, you're just traveling around, putting on these performances. You're here one day, gone the next, so to speak. Must be quite, as you were saying, Mikey, but Riley.
Well, it is. Mikey and I, we haven't lived in one place for longer than four months in the past 5 years or so. And doing these, these experiences, like Mikey was saying, every night is, we're going to go to 65 communities. Every night is opening night. Every night's closing night. And people host us, they host us in their homes. They feed us their favorite meals. And so we are, despite how much it is to go on this 65-day road trip across, the Rocky Mountain region here, it is so fueling. Because of the ways that we are welcomed and treated by all these communities.
How'd the show go last night? Timber, right?
Fantastic. First one on the road. So incredible. Beautiful evening. Yeah.
I think we had record numbers for our audience count last night. I mean, it was just, it felt like a kickoff to an incredible season ahead. I mean, it's really been terrific. We open both of our shows in Bozeman, and we have four performances of each show before we hit the road.
With the symphony.
Yeah, the Bozeman Symphony was one of our pre-show performances in our new sort of program, which we're coining Sharing the Stage, which is a really, really exciting new endeavor that we're on, where we are, we spend about 2.5-3 hours every day to build this enormous, gorgeous stage in each park. And all we want to do is really engage with the people in these communities. And so we are inviting many more this season, many more arts groups, local organizations to sort of share our stage before our performance begins and have that actual interchange of art or of culture in a way that, especially as an actor, like I get to then go out into the audience and sit and watch a native traditional dance or music, a violinist that's an expert in their craft, right? And people that from all these different places across Montana that are sharing their work with us and our audiences at large. And that's been a really, really exciting new sort of project this summer season.
How does Montana Shakespeare in the Park work? Do you get volunteers from each of these communities? I know you've got a troupe. And like you said, Mikey, it probably takes quite a while to put these stages together. And I want this program where you're doing pre-show performances with the audience members. That's probably, I don't know, as an artistic director, you probably have to find a way to work that in as well. But
it's all about engaging with our communities providing an opportunity to, both, provide a cultural arts experience, but elevate those that are in the community that are inspired by the arts, whether it's children's group, a children's camp that has the opportunity to then perform on our stage, or it's a local musician that maybe might even bring some folks to our show that wouldn't necessarily be inclined to come see a Shakespeare play in the park, and to give them an opportunity to see that this is not so bad. This isn't like reading when I was forced to read Hamlet in school, this is a lot more engaging, a lot more interesting. I mean, Shakespeare is meant to be performed. It's meant to be experienced in that way. And I think folks that find that come to one of our events for the first time find that there's a lot in it for them to enjoy, to experience.
Why? And compare that to where we now get a lot of our entertainment. You know, it's television for the most part. And so we're still very visual in a lot of ways, too. But, you know, Shakespeare, for me, like you said, is a perfect example, I think, of what brings communities together nowadays anyway.
Yeah, totally. You know, folks used to talk about it as going to hear a play. And you know, I mean, it's, of course, the, you know, one of the things that makes Shakespeare so special is the language and the, you know, the beauty of the language. That being said, you know, I being a, you know, a somebody that's been studying and performing Shakespeare for quite a few years now, still, when I go see a Shakespeare play, it's like, okay, what are they saying? What, it takes a second to kind of, you know, you got to adjust your ears to the language because it is English, but it is, you know, it's 400 years old. But the things that make it challenging in that way are also what make it so inspiring. Because when you connect with the themes of the play, when there's a particular line that expresses something that you experience, that we experience these days, it's like, oh, you know what? We, despite everything that, you know, as far as we've come, we're still experiencing the same struggles, you know, the same, you know, everyday difficulties with navigating, you know, love and loss and forgiveness and duty.
Yeah, truth and things like that. Yeah. Yeah,
it connects us to who we are as humans outside of our everyday, you know, rat race that we go through these days.
Mikey, what's it like to be in a Shakespeare play?
It's a great question. It is so I'll say that Shakespeare, specifically in the productions that we're performing this season. I mean, Hamlet, just the stakes of each scene, of each moment of the play itself, the stakes are just so high. And so to experience these like pretty extreme emotional turns throughout a 2-hour experience is unlike many other plays that I've performed. You know, it's sort of consistently switching, but, you know, turning all these corners and figuring out how to overcome obstacles in front of, you know, scene partners and the audience. And it is, it's really gorgeous. It's really, I mean, I have not spent as much time before a rehearsal process as I have with working with Shakespeare. I spent about a month prior to entering a rehearsal room, really, really doing all of my text work. So really noting what I am saying, what that means, why there's a comma here, why there's a colon here, what that sort of indicates, where to breathe within a line, because it is just, it, you know, it is subtly foreign to us. This sort of, older English that we don't speak colloquially to this day.
Well, thoughts are so much longer in Shakespeare. Yes. I mean, these days we speak in, you know, little snippets.
Right.
On the store.
LOL.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the texting culture. And Shakespeare's thoughts are, you know, so long, you know.
Good point.
And wrapping our ears, because they were, you know, they didn't have the visual, you know, world that we have as much as we live in. And, you know, people would go to see a play back then and would be able to repeat it verbatim because of that, you know, that kind of aural memory that they have. And so we work really hard in our rehearsal process to, and there's a lot of techniques. I mean, both of us have trained in school on acting Shakespeare, techniques that we use to try to make the text clear, you know, that deal, you know, like playing with pitch and rhythm. There's a lot of talk of antithesis, you know, which is still, you know, in so much of our language today and how we make things clear. You know, are you going to do this or are you going to do that? You know, and the way that pitch sets two things apart, the way that makes things clear and the way that we communicate. Talk about antithesis, setting two things. You know, I mean, the most famous one is to be or not to be, you know. And the way that antithesis, we use that, you know, right, the way that we use that in our language to make things clear. You want to do this or you want to do that?
Montana's Shakespeare in the Parks at shakespeareintheparks.org. You can go and find the full schedule. It opened up with a couple of nights in Bozeman, which I like that. We kind of talked about that. It tied in the Bozeman Symphony. Last night it was Big Timber. Even tonight, Laurel, Montana. It's a Winter's Tale in Laurel. These all start, mostly they all start at 6:30. From here on out, you're going to be in Ekalaka on the 27th for the Winter's Tale in Beach, North Dakota on the 28th in the Glendive. on the 29th. You guys, there's not, I looked at your schedule earlier and I was thinking, well, is there a day off in there where they can come in studio? And no, there wasn't, Riley.
No. We we have a saying that goes in the Shakespeare in the Parks world, it goes, sleep in September.
Thank you for that. We appreciate that. Let's talk about these plays just a little bit. What kind of entertainment is Hamlet? What kind of entertainment is The Winter's Tale? I know that you play Hamlet. That's the key part. Yeah. And so you probably have maybe a smaller role in The Winter's Tale because it's a lot of work. And then, Mikey, you play Horatio, which is sort of a foil to Hamlet, but probably his only real friend out there on stage.
Yeah.
The only real confidant that Hamlet has. The only person in the, you know, Hamlet's incredibly isolated. And Horatio is the one person in the play that Hamlet can connect with and kind of go along on this journey with, which is special for us to get to enjoy as you know, the partners that we are. Hamlet is, Arthur Miller said Hamlet is the most contemporary play ever written, you know? And so we get forced to read it in school and, folks, quotes from Hamlet, but, it really is, it's so relevant. There's so much to connect with in it. I mean, it's the original revenge tragedy, you know, that all of our, you know, films these days are adapted from. I mean, it's the most well-known of those stories, you know.
It's Lion King.
Yeah. The Lion King. My uncle killed my father and now I got to figure out how to make things right in the kingdom
it was the king of Denmark, who was killed by his uncle Claudius, right? And then married your mother,
yes.
Hamlet.
Yes.
And then the ghost, yes. of your father
returns.
Yeah. And what's he want you to do?
He wants me to avenge him. He wants me to, you know, make things right in the kingdom. There's talk of, you know, the ghosts being confined to fast in fires of purgatory until the foul deeds done in his days of youth are burnt and purged away. And, you know, that avenging his, you know, murder will make things right for him and release him and also make things right, of course, in the kingdom.
Mikey, what does Horatio see in that then? You know, seeing everything that Hamlet's going through, knowing that... still on the young side, so to speak. What does Horatio see in Hamlet?
Horatio comes into the play at the in the very first scene, unbeknownst to Hamlet, and is asked by two guards to watch this ghost because they don't know what to do with this ghost figure that appears. And so it is my task to then bring this very heavy news to Hamlet, which is that I just saw your dead father. I just saw him. Believe me, come speak to it because it will not speak to us.
These guys are acting, by the way, that you cannot not act.
I know. Yeah. And I think what's unique about Horatio too is that there aren't many characters other than maybe Ophelia who really are, and your mother Gertrude, who are really saying, I'm so sorry about your loss, because it, you know, Hamlet does lose his father and then immediately has to deal with his uncle marrying his mother. And so I think there are a couple moments of really, you know, some sincere condolences to my friend Hamlet.
But he's messed up. You know, he's messed up.
But yes, yeah. I mean, yeah. one of my favorite lines that I say, you know, when he's sort of threatening to speak to the ghost in sort of a violent moment, what is my line? Oh, we're here. Good morning.
Yeah, Horatio's.
What if it tempt you towards the flood and draws you into madness? Think of it, right? So there is a foil of like, let's just pause for a second. Let's think about what we're doing. What if you go mad? Mm-hmm. What if this sorrow turns into something else? What if this vision that we are seeing turns into something worse? And then how you actually handle that madness is...
Mm-hmm. Horatio's a scholar, and these two, Hamlet and Horatio, they're school buddies, college buddies. You know, they go to school in Wittenberg together, and they're back to Denmark for the funeral of Hamlet's father. And then not 2 months later, the marriage happens as well. And so Horatio is somebody that Hamlet can connect with, and of course, is, you know, serves as the catalyst. Horatio's there right at the beginning, and Horatio's one of the only ones left at the end.
That's right. Yeah. I did kind of review the play a little bit and about The Only One Left Standing. Is there a scene that you guys can act out now that...
Yeah, we'd love to.
Do it, do it. And we got like 3.5 minutes for the break.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this is right towards the end of the play. You know, Hamlet's gone on quite a journey. You know, spoiler alert here. But basically Claudius, the king, the evil king, my uncle, and Laertes, who, you know, is another character in the play that is his father, Polonius, manages to get accidentally killed by Hamlet. But basically, Laertes and Claudius have devised a way to get rid of Hamlet. They're going to poison him either with this poison dagger in this kind of exhibition fight, or they're going to poison him with this poison wine. Hamlet doesn't know any of this yet. But this little chunk of text between Horatio and Hamlet kind of touches on one of the major themes of the play and kind of the piece that Hamlet comes to through his journey of figuring out what his purpose is in all of this. But this is right before the fight. This is right when the challenge has been issued for the fight between Laertes and Hamlet.
Riley O'Toole as Hamlet, Mikey Gray as Horatio.
Yeah.
You will lose this wager, my lord.
I don't think so. Since Laertes went into France, I've been in continual practice. I shall win at the odds. But thou wouldst not think how ill all's here about my heart. But it's no matter.
If your mind dislike anything, obey it. I will forestall the repair hither and say you are not fit.
Not a whit. We defy augury. There's a special providence in the fall of a sparrow. If it be, 'tis not to come. If it be not to come, it will be now. If it be not now, yet it will come. The readiness is all. Since no man of aught he leaves knows, what is to leave betimes? Let be. Those Beatles stole something from Hamlet as well.
Let it be.
let be. I mean, that, you know, it speaks to the, you know, the... You know, Hamlet is so frustrated at the beginning of the play. You know, this to be or not to be famous speech about whether or not, you know, to just, you know, the questions of our, you know, our own purpose and our, you know,
mental
our own ability to,
absolutely. Then, huh?
When we are struggling, when we are in our darkest moments, gosh, wouldn't it be easier to just do away with it all? But the thing that keeps us going is the fact that, you know, what is it? What is it that does actually happen to us after death? What is that, as Hamlet, as Shakespeare wrote, that undiscovered country from whose born no traveler returns, that thing that puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. And Hamlet is wrestling with this throughout the play, but by the end makes it to this place of like, you know what? Let be. What's going to happen is going to happen. And there's only so much we can do to control. I mean, right before that, he says, you know, there's a divinity that shapes our ends. Rough hew them how we will. You
that
know?
Is and, most certain.
Yeah. Thanks, Hershey.
You're welcome.
And that's the beauty of that, is that if you study, for those who do study Shakespeare, there's a lot of reward in that. You know, understanding how those themes were universal back then and how they're universal now. And we're still struggling with those in a lot of ways, too. In their 52nd season this year, Montana's Shakespeare in the Parks. We have Shakespeare in the studio today. Riley O'Toole, the associate artistic director, plays Hamlet in the play Hamlet. Your shepherd in Winter's Tale. Mikey Gray is in also in studio with us. Horatio in Hamlet. And then Autocleus or...
Autolycus,
thank you, in Winter's Tale.
There's a funny bit in the play about that name, being like, how do you pronounce this name?
Spoiler, I have been asking the whole audience to repeat my name because it is such a silly word.
Yeah.
It's a fun little bit I do, yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. I want to talk more about putting on a production and what keeps Montana Shakespeare in the Parks going. Because I think this year you guys are embracing that history. Not that you haven't in the past, but there's more, I think, emotion in embracing the history of Shakespeare in the Parks. How do you put a play on? You guys are going to be in Laurel tonight, Winter's Tale. I mean, is somebody checking the park out now? And
we do it all. Yeah. We do it all. The team of 11 actors, you know, when we hire them and I give them a call on the phone from wherever they are in Chicago or whatever major market they're in. You know, I talk to them and say, hey, you know, you're being hired to play these roles, but really you're being hired to be a construction worker all summer. That's also going to get to do a play for 2 hours a day. at the beginning of the summer, it takes us close to 3.5 hours to build our set. It takes us another couple of hours at the end of the night to tear it all down. Between the travel time, you know, that takes us from community to community, there's not a whole lot of hours left in the day. It's a lot of hard work, and we rely heavily on our network of volunteers, tour coordinators in each of the 65 communities that we reach.
So somebody is volunteering in each of those communities to make sure the park's available. That's good.
Coordinate with our year-round staff cover. I mean, make sure that we have power, make sure that we have, you know, access to restrooms, to work with us on making sure, you know, we know that where we're going to eat and where we're going to stay, all of that goes into. And then this year, additionally, helping coordinate these pre-show performances, where we're offering an opportunity to give folks in our communities a chance to perform on our stage. But we rely heavily on volunteers.
Are there guidelines for that? Tell us more about that. How do they get involved in that?
They can reach out via the website to our staff about interest in performing in a particular community. You know, there's not a lot of guidelines for that. We are interested in all different kinds of artists, opportunities, and we have a whole variety of different folks that will be sharing our stage this summer, from children's groups, children's youth groups, theater, music, dance groups, to, you know, more seasoned performers. We'll have that later this week in Forsyth on Wednesday. We're gonna have a jazz band trio playing.
Forsyth jazz band.
I think the Marie Smith, Joseph Sullivan. I believe they're based out of Billings here.
Well, cool.
You know, we've got a cappella music, cowboy poetry, the Bozeman Symphony Ensemble, which we've spoken about. And then also, you know, children's theater groups. I mean, giving them a chance to experience what it's like to perform on our stage as our audience is arriving, you know, it's really a great opportunity to have that exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mikey, it's not always great weather in Montana.
Yeah.
How does that affect the performance? How have you had to finish a show with lightning in the background or rain or hail? Because that's one of the reasons I think I like Shakespeare in the Park so much is because, go ahead and do some Shakespeare, but let's do it outside.
Yeah.
Let's deal with the hail.
Yeah, let's do it outside, but let's also do it outside of Montana is a whole other thing. Yeah. I have definitely finished a play while it was lightly hailing. We performed a King Lear last year where it drizzled the entire performance. And what's the most astounding part of that is not that we get to do that. I mean, we're trained to be able to, you know, take on as much as we can. But what was the most impressive is that in Gardner, Montana, 2 years ago, people stayed for the entire performance. They were prepared. They had ponchos. It was as though nothing was affecting them. Yeah. And so it actually encourages us to step up and say, if they're going to sit there and not move and watch and pay attention and engage with us, we are going to show up, right? I mean, there are, of course, instances where we have to hold the show or
hurricanes.
Very few instances. Martin,
yeah, things like that, yeah.
Lightning's a big one.
Yeah, But
it's very rare. I mean, I don't think we have not canceled a show this season, and that is always our goal.
Yeah, we have an alternate indoor location in every place we go, but that call has to be made because of the amount of setup that it takes. We make that call in the morning and kind of share that information via social media. But, you know, a lot of the time, yeah, we battle through whatever rolls in. And you know, we work closely with the National Weather Service and their regional offices around the state. And, you know, oftentimes it's, even if it's clear, I mean, everybody in Montana knows you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes, you know, I mean, a lot of the times the joke with the National Weather Service folks is, you know, I call them to ask if anything's coming and they say, I don't know, what does it look like there? you know, I mean, the, you know, most advanced models that they have, it's still, you know, stuff crops up. And so we perform through it. But a lot of the time it makes for some of the most special memories, you know, I mean, people, you know, maybe they won't remember that it was King Lear a couple of years ago that they saw, but they'll remember having sat through the storm when that character was talking about the storm that's going to blow winds, crack your cheeks, rage you hurricanoes, and, you know, and all this stuff is going on. And I mean, if we wanted to produce this in a major market, the amount of, you know, the resources it would take to have rain going on stage. And I mean, we get it all. And it's those moments where those things line up. Are so special, and we offer, you know, the opportunity for those things to happen, those moments of synchronicity, because we're in the these outdoor spaces.
And it feels so perfectly matched for Shakespeare, right? There's so much language about nature in every play I've ever performed out here. And there are so many gifts where we can acknowledge a bird that we are speaking about as a bird flies over, swoops down like right over our stage, right? There are so many magical, magical moments where we can use the nature, where we can use that landscape, you know, in the most truthful way. There's no layering. There's no pretending there.
Isn't Shakespeare pretty hard to ad lib, though? I suppose once you get the language down a little bit, but if you do see a bird swoop in or a rabbit run across the stage, you have an opportunity to ad lib, I suppose. But you have to keep in character.
Yeah, depending on the character, you know, if it's a comedic character, we're not necessarily improvising in verse or in Shakespeare. You know, there's characters that we ad lib quite a bit every day anyways,
Shakespeare
and his advice to the players in Hamlet, you know, is aware of that as well. And his original clowns were, you know, he's like, he says in Hamlet, let your clown speak no more than is set down for them. Because even in the original, productions, the clowns would come out and they'd have their lines, but they'd do crowd work, And so we do that same kind of thing where, because we're out in the open air in the sunlight, and in theater, we talk about the fourth wall that separates the audience from the, performers. And there's no fourth wall in our performances. We are, you're seeing the audience members, we're all, aware of the train that's blowing by or the plane that's flying overhead or the kid who's, frisbee has just flown onto the stage that needs to be thrown off the stage so we can continue on. And all of those things, acknowledging those moments is what makes it special, that we're all experiencing those things together, and being able to play off of those are some of the best opportunities.
What's it like, Mikey, going into the schools and do the same thing?
That's a phenomenal question. And I actually, I am one of the only actors on this tour that hasn't actually been in our schools. I've witnessed the incredible work that the actors that go out on those contracts have done. We have Shakespeare in the Schools, and then which tours to high schools in the fall, and then our Shakes program, which tours to elementary schools in the spring. They're slightly smaller groups of actors, but they're also, in the way that we are, quote, construction workers, in addition to actors, in addition to ambassadors of this company, those contracts really demand not only actors but teaching experience and an ability to walk into a classroom after their performance of an abridged version of A Midsummer Night's Dream and then teach workshops to students for the rest of their school day about the themes of the play and bringing out some of the lessons that we want to teach to younger audiences.
We reach 110 schools, 25,000 students across our 5-state region. And we're one of the only programs in the country that brings Shakespeare-themed material into elementary schools. That's a program that really Montana Shakes began, adapting material for elementary school students that is based on the themes of Shakespeare. There's not actually a ton of Shakespearean text in those shows, but it's about introducing them to the art of live performance and that kind of audience engagement. I mean, when I did the elementary school tour, in Shakespeare's original Globe Theater, where they were performed in outdoor open-air theater, there'd be, they called them the groundlings, the folks that were standing near the stage, the standing room only kind of spot where they were, passing around their wine and eating and talking and, responding to what's going on stage. And I was like, wow, it's actually just like what it is in the elementary school. Because I'll tell you what, you ask a rhetorical question of a room full of, third graders, you're going to get 200 answers, Well, should I embark on this journey? You go,
no.
A ton of different answers, And we bring volunteers up from the audience for those performances. I mean, really, it's about cultivating an appreciation for the arts in those younger audiences and making it so they're, and then by the time they get to high school, we give them an 80-minute Shakespeare play. And then we, do workshops in the classrooms. I mean, I've engaged in some fantastic conversations with students you know, civics classrooms, government classrooms, you know, where we talk about different forms of government, following a production of Julius Caesar, yeah, or following a production of Romeo and Juliet, going into classrooms and talking about de-escalating conflict. And okay, how do these two end up like they do at the end of this play? Well, because nobody at any point said, hold on, let's pump the brakes here and not continue going tit for tat and escalating to the point where, you know, folks end up dead.
You're speaking to this program from time to time too, you know. Yeah. That's something that we could use. In fact, I was just kind of kidding with him that I'm gonna go steal some Shakespeare lines but I'll have to spend maybe the next 2 years trying to figure out what they mean, you know. but that's the you know, all of this is wrapped up in a play that you take out into a community. That it's the simple things, I guess. I'm curious about more of this school program. And who funds it, and you know, how does it keep going? Because it's just not sure delight that funds all these things.
No, certainly not. We over 75% of our funding comes from individual donors and foundations that are interested in, you know, the arts in underserved rural communities. A majority of the towns that we go into do not have access to anything of this kind. And so it really takes, I've stepped into this associate artistic director role, I've been working more on the development side of things and seeing just how much it takes to fundraise for this. And this is not something that just continues to happen on its own. And we really do rely heavily on our audiences, in the summer, to support it. Again, it's a free event that is being provided for communities, but we do, you know, solicit donations, and we, you know, sell merchandise, and all those things help us continue to provide these programs year round.
They're of great value to our community, so thank you for doing that. You're going to catch him in Malta, Utica, Lewistown. Hamlet's going to be in Zortman, Montana. Winter's Tale tonight in Laurel. And we have Riley O'Toole in studio, Mikey Gray, in the lightning round here. So tonight, 6:30 in Laurel, Montana, Winter's Tale. We haven't talked a whole ton about it, Riley. What are people going to see at 6:30 in Laurel tonight?
Oh, Winter's Tale is one of Shakespeare's late plays. Surely shows a master at the height of his craft. We fondly refer to it as an action adventure play. Spans space and time. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's like a Star Wars. You know, there's music.
Shakespeare Star Wars.
Oh yeah, there's music. Yeah. There's comedy. I mean, Shakespeare. It's like he's like tied as many knots as he could, and then found the brilliant way to untie all of them and to make for, you know, a beautiful ending. Technically is a comedy, but, you know, there's a lot of, you know, tragedy. There's a lot of, you know, different kinds of relevant themes in The Winter's Tale. A lot for everyone to enjoy.
Yeah. It sort of starts off in a place of a conflict of jealousy, which is a very, very human emotion, right? And the implications of how far that can go. Mm-hmm. And then in our second half of the play, we go to a very different place. There's a bear, which is not a spoiler because it is as written, you know, and we come to a really magical sort of whimsical world. So,
yeah, lots of fun for the whole family. Yeah. The Winter's Tale. It's one we haven't done in a while, and excited to be sharing it.
Well, I want to run away from home and join Shakespeare in the Parks for the summer. That might be a lot of fun.
Yep, we could use the hands.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Hey, thank you guys for doing this. And just on behalf of all of Montana.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Mikey Gray and Riley O'Toole. Thanks again for joining us for the podcast. Please share and subscribe and let us know what you think. Email me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. And don't forget, we're on weekdays on your hometown radio stations all across Montana. We hope to hear from you there too.